Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Em.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome back, Em, to the Bingeables Podcast. We have a lot to talk about today, so we are going to get right to it. We are here to talk about the Netflix and DreamWorks animated series, She-Ra and the Princesses of Power.
So, Chinlin, we're on the edge of greatness, turning darkness to light. We're right beside you, ready to fight. We're going to win in the end. We must be strong and we must be brave. We've got to find every bit of strength that we have and never let it go, because there are spoilers forthcoming for She-Ra and the Princesses of Power.
Oh man, she did it! I liked it.
Thanks. that was very impromptu. I would have normally sung it, but I didn't want to put your listeners through that. And, you know, I thought, with it being a spoiler warning, I thought doing a dramatic reading emphasised the spoiler wall a little bit more.
Hmm. That was pretty good for an impromptu. I'll give you that. Also, you're probably a better singer than I am.
I don't know. but I do love the theme song to this TV show. It's one of my favorites ever. So I think it's really fun.
It's really full of hope and brightness. Mm. And I think it really caters to the kid market, like this theme song.
Yeah, I think that it kind of encapsulates what this show is all about, quite literally. Mm-hmm. In the theme song, and it's really poppy, and it's really easy to memorize, and it's just to quickly, and I know you've not planned this, but just to quickly talk about the titles for this show. I really love the titles for this show. On Netflix, obviously, you have the option to skip the titles, and mm-hmm. I do for a lot of things. There are only a couple of shows on Netflix that I don't skip for. The first one is She-Ra. I don't skip the titles for this at all. And the other one is Marvel's Daredevil, because that is similarly a beautiful kind of visual introduction with the music and everything to Daredevil. But what I love about She-Ra is that, I don't know if you noticed this, but they change the titles as the seasons progress. And when we get into season 5... Oh my God, literally every time something changed in season 5, there was a new title. And I was floored. I was like, this is incredible. The fact that they're reflecting what's happening in the show in their title sequence. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I was all for it.
I noticed it, especially after Glimmer becomes queen, because her look at the very last screen where all the princesses and their friends show up, like, it's her queen look and not her her previous look.
Yeah. It's almost like it's tracking the characters and how they're changing, because when Adora loses She-Ra and she breaks the sword, the titles change from her becoming She-Ra at the end to her staying as Adora. And it's just little things like that. And when Horde Prime comes in, you get a section with Horde Prime. When he takes control mm-hmm. of everyone, you get them under Horde Prime. Mm-hmm. So like Mimista and everything. When Scorpia joins the princesses, you get Scorpia with the princesses. It's just so much thought has gone into it, and I love it. I love the whole thing.
For sure. So we are going to segue into talking about character development of the three of the four main cast members, characters, I mean. So we're going to start with a character development for Catra. I think hers was super dramatic and I loved every second of it. And I don't know, I just felt for her the whole time, especially in the earlier seasons, because she's got so much anger and insecurities. And most of that is because of how Shadow Reaver treated her as a child.
Yeah, Catra is completely fascinating as a character. Because when they're young, we see quite a lot of flashbacks to Catra and Adora as young children. Especially mm-hmm. towards the end of the show, we see more about how Catra used to behave. And essentially, it was she had such strong feelings for Adora that anytime anyone else was Adora's friend, she was just so supremely jealous that she would kind of lash out. And it feels very much like Catra has a lot of... She has a lot of ambition, but she also has a lot of confusion because of her feelings for Adora. And it's only kind of when Adora leaves the Fright Zone and joins the princesses that Catra, she feels like this sense of abandonment, but she also feels like I am now out of her shadow. Like I can make something of my life without Adora. But in doing so, she kind of has this ability to cast aside all of the people who are her friends with this pursuit of achievements. And kind of she has this want to be Force Captain because that was what Adora was. And she wants to please Shadow Weaver. And obviously she can't do anything to please Shadow Weaver. And Shadow Weaver and their relationship, I think, is supremely fascinating. But I kind of feel very much for Catra because she's so desperately wants to be loved. And she kind of has this duality in her character, in a sense that she's so afraid of being loved, but she wants it so badly. And one thing that I noticed about Catra is she, and I don't know if this is something that anyone else has kind of thought about, but I always wondered why she had two different eye colours. And then I thought, well, maybe she has two different eye colours because that's kind of symbolising that she wants this love, but she's also so fearful of it. So she kind of wants this kind of lightness, but she's also kind of so attracted to the darkness. And I know it's kind of, it doesn't really work because it's like yellow and blue, but I found it supremely fascinating to think of Catra and about how easy it is to push people away that you love. Especially if you're uncomfortable with your emotions and with your feelings. And I think that throughout the show, I think Catra demonstrates that she is in love with Adora, but she doesn't know how to control that emotion. She's so afraid of it. I mean, I don't know if you thought anything like that, but I certainly did.
So I have something embarrassing to admit. I didn't even realize Catra was in love with Adora until the end. I feel a little slow, but...
But I think that's okay though, because the show isn't set up to make you think that she might have been in love with Adora the whole time. But then when you get to the end, you're like, oh my god, of course she was in love with Adora the whole time.
It makes so much more sense. It makes so much more sense why she was that upset, why she was wanting to go through so many extremes with Shadow Weaver, Hordak Prime. It just clicked, and I was just like, oh, well, duh. But I actually want to go back to what you said about the duality of her personality and her struggles, because that's a really good insight, and I didn't even think about that with her eye colors. So, like, the like teal bluish color, maybe that kind of represents, like, the darkness and her ambitions against Adora and the rebellion, and then maybe the yellow is like the lighter part of her that wants to be loved.
Yeah, I mean that's how I read it. I mean, I don't know if the makers of the show actually had that intention. But there must have been some reason as to why she has different eye colours. But, I mean, I suppose there are a multitude of reasons why someone can have two different coloured eyes. It's not necessarily that they're, you know, drawn to the light or the darkness. But I feel like Catra is a character that, although she does bad things, I think ultimately you can empathise with her. And I think that's really important for a character like Catra, because when it comes to her redemption, you have to be able to empathise with a character to fully understand and accept their redemption arc. And I think that Catra, she does do bad things. And I think that, you know, she is the sort of character that she doesn't necessarily appreciate the things that she does hurt people, and the things that she says hurts people. Like, Scorpia is a great example. Scorpia only ever wanted to be her friend, and Catra would just constantly push her away. So much so that Scorpia also left, and then Catra was alone again, and she just kept pushing and pushing people away. And I think it's just, she just felt so uncomfortable with any sort of emotion. It wasn't necessarily just feelings of love that she had for Adora, but any sort of emotional connection with anyone, she would just push them away. But ultimately, you could still empathise with her, even though she did some quite awful things. But I think that just speaks to the quality of the show, really.
You said everything right. I agree with everything you said.
I'm not even joking. I've not even got it written down in front of me. That's just kind of me saying stuff. I'm surprised I'm not articulate, to be honest, but
you are very articulate, and it's because you do a solo podcast, and I admire you for that.
I mean, this is an absolute joy for me, because it's like I finally get to talk to someone other than myself. so yeah, this I am loving this. But yeah,
that episode where Scorpia leaves her and then Catra shows up to Scorpia's I guess tiny room and sees the note. It was so heartbreaking, but you saw that coming, because Catra was just treating her so badly. Like, she didn't really think of Scorpia as a friend at that point, because she was, like, just the Force captain giving orders, right? And she was so frustrated about the rebellion. And then she just took out all her anger on Scorpia, Lonnie, poor Kyle.
Kyle! Rahelio! Yeah, those guys really got the brunt of Catra. But like I say, ultimately, I feel like had they not invested so much in Catra, in the fact that the audience can empathise and understand her, that her redemption would have kind of come a bit out of nowhere. But I feel like that what this show does really well is it lays a lot of groundwork in its earlier seasons, and then it pays that off in season 5 so wonderfully, so that you see all of these things Catra does, and the fact that Adora is still so willing to forgive her and to let her back in, that this is kind of what their stance has been from day one. It's, you talk about your emotions, you forgive your friends, you love unconditionally, and you're always there for people. And Adora has never really let Catra down in that regard. It's kind of been the other way. Catra's always kind of let Adora down. But even so, Adora still wants her in her life. And so when Catra is ultimately redeemed, it's not a surprise, but it's also not... It's also not something that the audience is going to think is unrealistic because of the way the show has set up her arc. And it just does it so well. I think that the whole kind of Catra and Adora relationship is completely fascinating. And it like I say, it pays it off in dividends in season 5.
I just thought of something with Catcher's Redemption. The whole theme of that is also to teach people, hey, you can forgive. It's possible. Catcher did terrible things, and Adora was like, I know there's good in you, and I can forgive you. And it worked out for both of them.
Yeah. I think that's a really important message as well, especially nowadays, because I think there's a lot of social divide. And I think that ultimately, if you are still willing to communicate with someone and forgive them, they may be beyond forgiveness in many ways. You know, they may be completely horrible people, but they may also be redeemable, like Catra. And I just think it's Catra cannot communicate with anyone. She just kind of shuts straight down. She doesn't want to talk. She doesn't want to talk about feelings, especially. And I think that's kind of her main problem. Whereas someone like Adora is willing to do that. So they kind of make quite a good partnership in that regard. But I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's something the show, if the show teaches anything, because, you know, if it's a show that's aimed at children primarily, it should teach children stuff. And I think this show does teach children really good things. But ultimately, it's the, it is okay to forgive someone. That's not for them, it's for you. Because even if Catra had decided to stay evil, for example, at least Adora has forgiven her. Because that's kind of for Adora to move on. And I think when you forgive someone, it's never for them, it's for you. And if you have the ability to forgive, then that's kind of the greatest power that you can have for kind of you and for your life. And I think that's a really important statement, really, that this show does talk about, that forgiveness is so important.
And it gives you peace of mind when you're able to forgive someone.
Yeah.
Do you want to move on to Adora?
I mean, we kind of talked a little bit about Adora already. But yeah, do you want to start with Adora? Because I started with Catra.
Let's see. Adora is our main character, and she's the person who is always stepping up. She's the natural-born leader. She is always willing to make sacrifices and always never listens to her friends when they're like, hey, you shouldn't do this. You should have a plan. Oh, no, wait, I take that back. Usually Adora does have a plan. There was that one episode where she was trying to get everybody to make a plan. I think that was season one.
It was either season one or season two.
Sorry, I'm rambling.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And that's one of the funniest episodes when they're all coming up with their plans.
Yeah. But I think Adora shows some character development, especially at the end of season four, when for the good of all of Etheria, she destroys the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she's a weapon.
Yeah.
And then season five, you see more of that as she's learning to deal with not being a superwoman anymore.
Mm. Yeah. Adora again is completely fascinating because she is our main character. So she's kind of our focal point. Because, I mean, she is the titular character. She is She-Ra. So she is kind of our main focus, but I feel like so much of the show is about kind of the best friend squad. So it's about like the sort of triangle of her and Bo and Glimmer and all of their kind of respective stories. But I feel like for Adora, because obviously she starts out the show and she's a member of the Horde and she becomes Force Captain and she is like the favourite of Shadow Weaver, which again is causes a lot of confliction with Catra. And essentially everything that Adora grew up with, because she was obviously adopted by Shadow Weaver as an infant and raised by Shadow Weaver. and everything mm-hmm. that she's been told about the Horde and all of that is wrong. And it's a really interesting thing to talk about, in that you essentially believe whatever you're raised to believe. And that kind of goes for any child in any circumstance. If you're raised, for example, if you're raised by racist parents, the chances are that that child is going to grow up and also be racist. And it's only, you know, hopefully when that child grows up that they realise that that's wrong. And Adora's kind of very much the same. She's been raised in this, in the Horde, and she believes that the Horde is good, essentially. She believes that they're doing the right thing. And it's only when that she befriends Bo and Glimmer and she realises that actually she's been on the wrong side for her whole life. And only now that she's on the right side, that she's in the rebellion, can she actually do the good that she wants to do. And I kind of feel like her transition into She-Ra, and I just want to quickly point out as well, because there was a lot of stuff in the media when this show was announced, when they actually showed the images of the characters, and specifically She-Ra herself. And a lot of the internet was quite up in arms about how She-Ra looked, because the previous She-Ra was quite a shapely woman with a tiny waist, big boobs, you know, like a Barbie, basically. But this mm-hmm. is a very normal looking young woman. And so Adora obviously looks completely normal, you know, in physicality. And then she transforms into She-Ra, who obviously is taller. But again, just kind of looks, because the representation of different body types on this show is pretty much unheard of. Like, I don't really know any other show, especially like an animated show, that has so much representation in terms of different body types, different heights, different sizes. It's quite phenomenal. But I feel like the link that Adora has to Bo and Glimmer, it's quite interesting, because when the show starts out, I mean, she's She-Ra. She is the most powerful being pretty much on the entire planet. And she also has this kind of story as well with that she actually belongs to a race called the First Ones. And she was brought to Etheria through a portal by Light Hope. And she finds out that Light Hope has been lying to her. And she also, like you said, she finds out that she's a weapon. But ultimately, she has this kind of grounding in her relationships with Bo and Glimmer. But then Glimmer becomes queen, and they have quite a little bit of an antagonistic relationship, because Glimmer is queen, and Glimmer obviously also has a sense of blame towards Adora as well for the death of her mother, Queen Angela. But I really, really like Adora. I think that Adora stands for doing the right thing. Not necessarily at the right time, but always doing the right thing. And I think she's a really good character to kind of really root this show in, something that she is happy to give time to some of these supporting characters, because I think it would be very easy to make this show about her and her alone. But the show, the show does this really great thing where it talks about She-Ra and Adora, but then occasional episodes will be about side characters and them doing other things. And it's not always about the overarching story. It's sometimes they kind of go off on little missions and we learn a little bit more about other characters. But I found out as well that Adora is supposed to be like 17, 18 at the start. And then kind of transitions over a 3-year period to sort of 2021 by the end of the show. And you kind of think, what was I doing when I was 17, 18? Like, I was not as responsible as Adora. Like, I don't even know. If I'd have been given the power of She-Ra, I'd have... I don't know what I would have done with it. But she is a responsible young woman, thankfully.
I read the age thing in one of the articles, too, when I was doing research on the show. How she starts out being 17, 18. And I was just thinking, you know what? Adora makes a really good role model for younger girls.
Yeah.
She's responsible. She wants to do good. She cares about the people that she loves and is around. Yeah.
Yeah, she is a very noble warrior. You know, she is strong and she is brave, and that's kind of the point of the theme song. But it's not just her, it's kind of everyone, you know. She has the power of She-Ra, but she needs the support of all of the other princesses as well. And I kind of really like that about the show, because it is about teamwork, it's about friendship and loyalty. Mm-hmm. And even though she's been raised in a military environment, and you would think a military environment for a child is probably not the most nurturing environment for any child, but you know, she shows this amazing amount of positivity regardless of what's kind of happening. And like you say, she's responsible. She always puts other people first. And I think that's a really nice quality to have in anyone, but especially the person who's front and center of your TV show.
Yeah, yeah. And you actually brought up something that I also wanted to add more to, about how the show's really good about diversifying different body shapes, because guess what, media? Not everyone is going to have big boobs and not everyone's going to have a tiny waist. Because
absolutely.
Barbie's image does not represent all of women.
Absolutely.
That was actually one of the first things I noticed when I saw Glimmer for the first time in the pilot. I was like, wow, they have a main character who's a girl who isn't super skinny.
Yeah.
And I love that. And She-Ra, like you said, how people were upset about her body shape when they released the images before the show started. Like, She-Ra looks normal. She doesn't have the big boobs. And that's good, because not everybody has that.
Yeah.
I have tiny boobs. So I feel like I need to point this out, people.
I mean, you know, I don't have tiny boobs, but I appreciate seeing characters with all sorts of different body shapes. And the other thing I really love about Adora is when she is She-Ra, she's supposed to be strong, and she looks strong. Like, she looks like she has strength in her arms and in her legs. Because I'll be completely honest with you, if you are someone who works out, or runs a lot or anything, you tend to have quite muscular legs. You don't have stick thin legs. I am a person. Mm-hmm. I do not have stick thin legs. I have quite chunky legs. I have quite muscular calves. And then I look at a character like Glimmer and I'm like, Glimmer actually looks quite a lot like me. And I, you know, that delights me to see that I feel like a character like Glimmer can be a character on a TV show. She also becomes queen. And obviously we can talk about Glimmer in a little bit, but I love the fact that her look changes when she becomes queen, and she's still the same character, but her hair changes and she just looks so different. She looks more regal. And I love Glimmer. I mean, let's be honest, there's not a character in this show that isn't brilliant in any way. They're all pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Let's just start talking about Glimmer.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, let's. Do you want me to start on Glimmer, or did you want to start on Glimmer?
I liked how the show was very, what's the word? They were very consistent about showing us the progression of Glimmer's powers.
Mm-hmm.
So after I finished watching season 5, I went back to watch the pilot just to like refresh my memory of what happened in the pilot and like how the characters were. She had to recharge every few uses of teleporting.
Yeah.
And even when she did teleport, like, it was really hard for her to teleport with multiple people. So they went from Glimmer, who was still kind of in training, kind of getting used to using her teleportation power. They transitioned her over time into someone who got the hang of it, was able to transport with multiple people many times in the battle to... she got the hang of her power. She, at the end of season 3, when her mother dies, and then she has to become queen in her coronation, she got connected with her runestone, right? Her moonstone, so she was able to, like, get more power from that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so with the Moonstone, she basically had full access and full control of her powers by then. So that was a good... It was nice to see her progress in those 4 seasons in that sense. And then, like you mentioned, when she becomes queen, like, she changes her hair. Her color scheme, her clothes look similar, but it's just slightly different. But, like, the colors are the same. And then, like, she starts to use her dad's old sorcery staff, which I thought was a nice change in her look. And, what else? Well, when she's queen, she is a leader of a kingdom, so she has to transition into that leadership role, which, is a huge change and not one that she was expecting to get anytime soon. So yeah. I think she did a good job of becoming queen, thinking of her people, her civilians, thinking about other kingdoms, and the whole conflict with her and Adora in season 4.
Yeah.
I think it made sense because Adora was used to being alpha dog, and now Glimmer is also an alpha dog, but in different ways, because Adora is more of the warrior, and Glimmer's more of the, I guess, diplomat? I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like she has to be more diplomatic because she's queen. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Glimmer, sort of the season 1 to the end of season 3 Glimmer, I mean, she does have a period of growth. Like you say, she kind of learns to control her magic a little bit more. But ultimately, I mean, she's kind of like this stubborn princess. Like, she kind of balks at tradition. Like, she wants to be rebellious. She's kind of always disobeying her mother. She kind of gets grounded a lot. And it kind of obviously speaks to a typical teenager, really. Because, I mean, that's what she is. So she does have this kind of very impulsive, rebellious personality. But that kind of often gets her into danger because she doesn't tend to have a plan. And we kind of see that in Glimmer kind of as she progresses. So even when she becomes queen, she still kind of goes into things without having a plan. And that's mainly because she has this conflict with Adora over who's the leader kind of thing. Which I think is actually really interesting in their friendship. Because obviously when you are the almighty warrior Shira, and then your best friend becomes queen, then how does that power dynamic work? You know, who essentially is the bigger boss? But I really love Glimmer in a sense that she's very loyal, you know, she's very enthusiastic. She's always trying to do the right thing for people. She is kind of constantly working on her magic ability. But she's also quite insecure as well. I think she has this kind of feeling deep inside her that the other princesses see her as weak, because at the start of the show, she has to recharge, like you said. And it's only kind of as the show progresses that she becomes stronger and she becomes queen. She kind of goes under the tutelage of Shadow Weaver to kind of help hone her ability, which again kind of sees her at odds with Adora, because Adora sees Shadow Weaver as a threat. And I mean, Shadow Weaver is, again, a wonderfully complex character. You never, like I said in the preview episode, you're never really certain of where Shadow Weaver's alliances lie. And I really love that about her, because you're constantly on edge with Shadow Weaver. But Glimmer has this connection to Shadow Weaver. Maybe because Angela has died, she sees kind of Shadow Weaver as a tutor and a teacher in the wake of her mother's death. And I think that Glimmer realizes that in order to be a good queen, you need to listen to the people, and you need to not necessarily kind of charge in, you know, all guns blazing. You need to actually know how you're going to react. And sometimes you do need to be diplomatic. And as queen, she is kind of the figurehead of Etheria. And I mean, obviously that gets her into some hot water going into season 5 with Horde Prime, because she ends up captured. But again, you know, she kind of develops this relationship with Catra, because Catra is also somewhat of a prisoner on the ship. And Catra ends up saving Glimmer. So she basically, she doesn't sacrifice herself, but she gets herself captured in order to get Glimmer off the ship. Which, again, it's kind of another one of Catra's very redeeming acts. Because her and Glimmer have never really gotten on, because she sees Glimmer as this kind of figure of she's jealous of her. She's jealous of the relationship that Glimmer and Adora have. But it's only when they actually sit down and speak that they realise that they have a lot in common. And Glimmer kind of starts talking to Catra like she's a friend, and Catra starts to open up to Glimmer, and it's a really nice scene, actually. But Glimmer has that ability, I think, to be that kind of kind and supportive individual that makes you actually want to sit and talk to her. And I think that kind of only grows as she becomes queen as well. I mean, she obviously has a regal obligation, so she just kind of have to be there for her subjects. But I think ultimately Glimmer is one of the characters who visually changes the most, as well as kind of changing the most internally, because she becomes less rebellious. She becomes less stubborn and short-tempered as she becomes queen, because she realises that that's what a good queen is. A good queen doesn't just rush into battle. A good queen has a plan. So I think her growth is actually probably grows the most out of all of the core cast, I think, other than Catra.
Gotcha. Yeah. Supporting characters. Oh my god, there's so many good supporting characters. Oh man.
We would be here forever if we talked about all of the great supporting characters.
I know. Okay, so for Scorpia, I think she has a really good journey, because she went from being a princess, she was sort of a princess, but then like Hordak took over her kingdom, and then like, oh my god, we never even know about her parents. Like, are her parents just dead?
Yeah, I think so. I think I think pretty much her whole kingdom is dead. She's the only one left,
oh,
I think.
Oh man. Yeah. But yeah, like, she's on Hordak's side, but only because he took over her kingdom. And then, like, her personality and her spirit has always been more reflective of, you know, the rebellion, the side of good. It's just under difficult and unfortunate circumstances that she's on Hordak's side. And then eventually she comes over to the rebellion side and finally gets to connect with her runestone, the Black Garnet. So, and finally becomes a princess. Like, I don't know. It's a very nice story, and it comes full circle. Because she was a princess to begin with, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was all I had to say about Scorpia. I know you like her too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I really love Scorpia. And I think it's because when you think of a princess, you know, you would think of someone who looks like Adora. You know, someone who's traditionally very beautiful, you know, long blonde hair, statuesque, you know. And the one thing I love about this show is that the princesses are not kind of carbon copies of each other. They're all given their own look. They're all given their own personality. But Scorpia essentially is not a character that you would look at and immediately think that she was a princess, because she obviously has the scorpion pincers. And she has the stinger as well. And so you would automatically think that, well, she looks like a bad guy. But I think what I love about Scorpia is that she kind of has this innocence to her. I mean, she is very dedicated to the Horde when she's there. Like, she wants to do the best possible job for the Horde that she can do. She wants to be the best friend to Catra that she can possibly be. Like, she has this determination to be the best at whatever she's doing. But she also has this kind of naivety when it comes to friendships. Like, she wants to be friends with people, but they don't necessarily want to be friends with her. And what I really love about Scorpia is she doesn't really get to experience friendship with the Horde. Like, she wants to think that Catra is her friend, but she kind of feels betrayed by Catra. So when she eventually joins the rebellion and she becomes like one of the princesses, like, I know at first they're a little bit wary of her, but she really shows herself to be very kind and loyal. Like, there's a couple of instances where she accidentally stings someone and she's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, like, it's a defense mechanism, I can't help it, and I'm really sorry. And like, she doesn't actually have any malicious intention. So even though she is from the Horde, I mean, Adora was also from the Horde, and they've kind of, the princesses have still accepted Adora, and I really love that they accepted Scorpia as well, because I love that she describes herself as a hugger. And she's just like constantly hugging people, and she just wants to make friends, and she wants to be there for her friends. And I think that she's one of the most endearing characters in the whole show. And I love at the end, like in season 5, where she doesn't really believe in herself. She doesn't believe that she can do something. And she kind of has to tell herself, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And then she does it. And like, there's a scene where she kind of ends up on a stage. She starts singing. But it's really funny because she's supposed to be there undercover. And she starts singing about being a spy. And it's just the most brilliant song. But yeah, I really, really love Scorpia. I think she's one of the best characters. And I kind of wish we had a bit more of her, really. But it's hard when you've got such a tight ensemble show. But Scorpia is a great character. Like I say, she's not your typical princess, but she still has the princess powers. She just doesn't look like any of the others. But, you know, you don't judge a book. Can't even say that. Don't judge a book by its cover, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out, because She kind of does look like a bad guy to begin with. I remember thinking, at least with her pincers, like, I remember thinking, how does she take off or put on her clothes without ripping them? And like, how does she go to the bathroom with the pincers?
I don't know.
I feel like that would be painful.
I've never thought of that until now.
And I was just thinking, like, those pincers are really good for, like, attacking people, right? So, like, you know, she kind of just looked like the bad guy. And then, obviously, her personality isn't malicious, as you said. But, yeah, she's a great character. And the nice thing is, I think she got plenty of screen time for a supporting character. Yeah. So I was very content with her story. And then next, I wanted to discuss Entrapta. So the episode in season 1 where we meet Entrapta, I instantly fell in love with her because she's basically the scientist slash slash engineer of the whole cast. She's got this intense curiosity about technology. She's always testing things. She wants to experiment and try new things. She's not afraid to try new things. And I think that's a good trait in general to have. But her voice is also so very chipper, despite her like dark mask whenever she's like, whenever she puts her mask on and she's working with like those tools. I forget the name of those tools, but you know the ones I'm talking about. Yeah, so, and I like that her hair has its own personality.
Yeah, it's almost like,
it's like another pair of hands.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the word to describe it, and the word to describe it just has completely left my brain. But yeah, it's almost like its own sentient being, her hair. And I really like that, because she can kind of use it to walk. She can use it to use tools. So it is quite fascinating. I mean, when I see Entraptor, I kind of see myself a little bit. And I know people are going to be like, oh God, she thinks she's Entraptor. And I'll tell you why I see Entraptor is that Entraptor is incredibly focused. She's the sort of person that once she sets her mind on something, so for example, once she decides that she wants to see a First One ship, she's all about the ship. And sometimes she can be overly focused. So I kind of feel like Entraptor has this personality, like you said. She's very cheerful. She's very bubbly. She's got that very kind of cute voice. I'm not saying I have a cute voice, by the way. But, you know, she's overwhelmingly kind to everyone. Like, she's kind to the princesses. She's kind to the Horde. She's especially kind to Hordak. And they have a very interesting relationship going forward. But the reason why I relate so much to Entraptor is the fact that I grew up very much like Entraptor, in a sense that I've always been very technologically focused. So I work in the field of IT. So I've always been very kind of focused on technology. And I've always been very fascinated with how things are built. So when I was when I was like a teenager, sort of going into my 20s, I basically learned how PCs were built, and I would take them apart and put them back together. You know, so it's very, very similar to Entraptor.
Man.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm the Entraptor of this podcast. But the other thing that I kind of feel about Entraptor is that she's kind of seen that she can be very easily manipulated. Not that I'm suggesting I can be easily manipulated. It depends. It depends if Keanu's listening. If so, yes, I can be very easily manipulated. but Entraptor's kind of seen as different. You know, she's not a standard princess in a sense that all of the other princesses have these powers, and Entraptor is different. But the thing I love about Entraptor, and the thing that I think Entraptor teaches any children that are watching, is that it's okay to be different. It's okay to like what you like. You know, but ultimately, you should be kind, because Entraptor is never mean to a single person. She's kind to everyone. Other people have kind of let her down a little bit, and Entraptor felt like she was left with the Horde. But she kind of made the best of a bad situation while she was there. And she got close to Hordak. And I think their relationship is one of the most enduring relationships of the show, because Hordak didn't trust anyone. He wouldn't let anyone in other than Entraptor. And when he thought Entraptor had betrayed him, he couldn't take it. He was just the most upset that he's ever been when he thought Entraptor had betrayed him.
So torn up.
Yeah. And I just think that Entraptor is that sort of personality. and very much like myself, that people get to know the person behind Entrapta and they just fall in love with her, as many people do with me. So I do feel very similar to Entrapta in so many ways. I will add, though, that my hair is not a sentient being. It does not. we don't have any similarities in that regard. But I just think that she's a great character for kids to understand that, like I say, it's okay to be different. She is different, as princesses go, but that doesn't mean she's any less worthy of praise and of adulation. And sometimes, and another thing this show does really well, is it's okay to be flawed. It's okay to be a flawed personality that sometimes over-focuses on things. And I'm the biggest culprit. I have this tendency to overly focus on my podcast and what I'm doing for the podcast. And again, this is why I feel so linked to Entrapta, in that I know that I shouldn't be like that. But that's just how I am. But that's okay, because I'm me, you know, and she's her. And I think that it shows people that it's okay to be like that. But it's also okay for that person to, you know, that person isn't a failure for not achieving something. And I have to tell myself that a lot, that just because I fail at something, it's fine. It's okay to fail. But it's also okay to let people in as well, and I think Entrapta does that. I certainly do try to do that as well. I feel like I've gone on about Entrapta for a lot, but I feel very connected to Entrapta in many ways. Just call me Entrapta from now on.
her episode where we're introduced to her for the first time was definitely the one that got me super, super hooked, and I binged the rest. So I totally understand your love for Entrapta, because I am feeling the same way.
And
I also want to point out two things that you sort of mentioned. There are two really good lessons to learn, at least for kids and adults as well, when you're watching Entrapta throughout the show. And you already hit on it, and I'll just say it one more time. It's okay to be different, and Entrapta embraces that. Mm. She's not ashamed to be different. She loves being different. Yeah. It's who she is.
Yeah, exactly.
And she loves it.
Yeah, and you should love who you are. It's important to love who you are. You should never change for anyone. And Entrapta proves that. Entrapta doesn't change for anyone. She's exactly the same with the Rebellion as she is with the Horde. She is who she is. And I just think that's something to be celebrated, really, that she doesn't change at all.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other quick thing you mentioned about failure, like, to Entrapta, failure just means you have an opportunity to learn and continue testing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, that again is something that I can very much relate to. I will just quickly add that when I did just say that Entrapta doesn't change. I mean, she kind of does, because we do see in the final season that she does feel guilt for what she did with the Horde. And I think that's important for the other characters to know, that she knew that working with the Horde was wrong. And she kind of admits that she's not very good with people. And she understands technology more than she understands other people. But she at least tries. Like, she tries really hard to understand people. And sometimes it's okay to have sort of bad people skills, but just to kind of just say something to someone and just kind of say, look, I'm really struggling with this situation. I'm not very good in social situations. And people will help you, like the princesses help Entrapta. I think that's a really important thing. I mean, this show teaches so much. It's such an educational show for something that on the surface is so light and colourful and bright. You know, the layers of this show are so complex and so interesting. And again, it's a reason why I'm so delighted that we're here talking about it.
Yeah, for sure. I know you wanted to talk about Mermista, so I'm going to let you take the reins.
The thing with Mermista, right? I mentioned it a little bit in the preview show that we did. But Mermista, the main reason I love Mermista is because she's voiced by Vella Lavelle. And Vella Lavelle was in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And essentially, the character of Mermista is pretty much exactly the same as the character that she plays in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And I'm completely here for it because Mermista is so kind of sarcastic. And she's kind of got this really kind of blunt, she doesn't tend to show emotion, but it doesn't mean that she doesn't have any. She just, again, maybe it's because I feel very linked to Mermista. I mean, I don't really have difficulty showing emotion because, you know, I'm showing emotion right now. But sometimes it's really hard to show emotion when it's seen as a negative emotion, like sadness. And the thing that I love most about Mermista is that she is quite stoic. Like, she doesn't particularly express herself. She would basically be rubbish for a podcast. And I'm not suggesting that Vella Lavelle would be rubbish for a podcast, because I think Vella Lavelle would be extremely brilliant on a podcast. But she's not very good, Mermista, at expressing her feelings, especially with her relationship with Seahawk, because Seahawk is the complete polar opposite of her in every respect. Like, he's this kind of showy, bombastic, you know, he loves shanties and telling tall tales, and they are just polar opposites in every way. But I really love that Mermista, she kind of retains this very sarcastic energy, but she also is not afraid to kind of speak up and say that she's really good at stuff. So she'll just be like, you know, when she kind of leads for a while, when Adora's not there in at the start of season five, Mermista is kind of leading. And she's just like, I'm really good at leading. Like, I am the best leader. she just says it in such a blunt way. I could never speak like Vella Lavelle. I think she's got such a great voice. But I love the character. I think she's so much fun. I love seeing her on screen. And obviously she can control water. So, I don't know what it
That's
is about
pretty
Mermista,
badass.
But she's, I love all the princesses in their own way. But there's something about Mermista that she just, I don't know. Maybe it's the Vella Lavelle thing. Maybe it's because I was such a big fan of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I don't know. But I love Mermista. I wish we had more Mermista, because I think she's great.
I'm always down for her sarcasm.
Yeah, exactly.
She has one of the best lines on the show. Oh, man. Oh, and I didn't even put down Seahawk in this outline. I always love it when he shows up in an episode, because it always feels so random. But you love random. How random it is, because he just brightens up a scene.
Yeah.
And I always love how he just goes, adventure!
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. And I love the fact that he occasionally bursts into song, like, randomly. But mm-hmm. I love that he is just so obsessed with Mermista that he would literally do anything for her. And he's always, like, professing his love for her. And she's just like, yeah, whatever. You know, back to him. But you can tell that she does feel the same way. She's just not the same personality as him. But maybe that's why they work so well together. Because they do work well together.
Because they complement one another.
Exactly. They're like chalk and cheese, really. But I do love Mermista a lot.
So moving on to Swiftwind, our favorite unicorn. Favorite flying unicorn. Oh, God. Oh, I really love Swiftwind's voice. The person who voices Swiftwind is Adam Ray, and I have never seen Adam Ray in anything, but his voice as Swiftwind, he's just... there's a word for it, and I can't think of it right now because my brain is tired. not from talking with you, tired just in general, because it's a Saturday for me.
That's fine.
He's just so chipper. I love his connection with She-Ra and Adora, and he's one of the boys.
Yeah.
There's that one episode where him, Seahawk, and Bo go out, and then they get kidnapped.
Oh, yeah, they go to, like, a bar, don't they?
How do you tie a horse to a wooden stick? Like, that just doesn't work, but with Swiftwind, I'm okay with that.
I think what I really like about Swiftwind is that when we first meet him, he's literally just horsey. And then he basically kind of names himself. So, like, he calls himself Swiftwind, and he kind of has this... So he knows who he is from the very start. You know, he's not just your average horse. Like, he's more than that. Like, I think at one point he considers starting a horse uprising. And I really love that he has a very strong sense of self. And that he's kind of got this confidence. And I love, especially in season 5, where She-Ra is gone. Like, She-Ra is no more. And Swiftwind is like, I can't feel her. So he has this connection. But then he starts to feel her and he gets excited because he's like, She-Ra's back, She-Ra's back. And I really love that the kind of the chemistry that he has with Adora and the fact that they're so kind of linked to each other. But I love that Swiftwind is like the biggest hero. As far as he's concerned, like he is literally the hero of everything. He's the hero of the rebellion. He kind of, whenever he introduces himself into a scene, he just kind of pops his head in and goes, Swiftwind, just to kind of announce himself. I think he's a lot of fun. And obviously he's a unicorn. He's like a unicorn Pegasus with brightly colored wings. I mean, How much more brilliant can you have is like a unicorn Pegasus with these beautiful bright coloured wings. There's nothing better as far as I'm concerned.
I wonder if you can get stuffed animals of Swiftwind.
I'm sure you can.
I totally want one now.
Yeah, you should buy one.
Oh, man. It's funny because I've never thought of myself as someone who would be into unicorns.
But you are now.
But I love Swiftwind. I know there's so many different supporting characters and we're almost running out of time. So I'm going to end our supporting characters section with King Micah, who is voiced by Daniel Dae Kim. And I was just like, oh my God.
Before we started recording, you told me it was Daniel Dae Kim and I was floored. I was like, I did not know it was Daniel Dae Kim at all. And I was like, I wonder why I like that guy so much, like the character. And now I realize it was because it was Daniel Dae Kim, who I love. So King Micah, Daniel Dae Kim.
I never saw that coming, that he was stuck at Beast Island.
No, that came out of nowhere. Like I was expecting them to obviously find Entraptor, but yeah, that really came out of nowhere. But I really loved that for Glimmer, because obviously she lost her father when she was young, and then she lost her mother in season 3. And to have her father back, because obviously we've not even really talked about her aunt, Castor Speller, either, who's obviously voiced by Sandra Oh, who's also a legend. So yeah, I mean, Castor Speller's not really in it very often, but I love that they got such a great supporting cast as well. You know, Daniel Dae Kim, Sandra Oh, obviously Lorraine Toussaint as well, playing Shadow Weaver. They got some really good names for this show.
One thing I wanted to mention with Micah was that him coming back was a huge shock to me, and I enjoyed it because the writers gave Micah his Alan Parrish moment.
Oh, like in Jumanji?
Yeah. where he's been out in the wild for too long.
Yeah.
And has kind of forgotten how to talk to people. But at the same time, you're so grateful to see him because you really need him back.
Yeah, I love that he tries to, like, forge a relationship with Frosta. And he just, like, treats her like a five-year-old child. And he's like, oh, come sit on my shoulders. Like, Glimmer used to love that. And she's like, dude, I'm a princess. Like, leave me alone.
I rule my own kingdom. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah.
Oh. And he's also a super powerful sorcerer because he learned from Shadow Weaver when he was younger. Yeah. So that's his powers come in pretty handy in really tough situations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, like, having him and Glimmer and Casterspell are together, it's a real kind of family triumph when it comes to, like, defeating Horde Prime at the end. And I really like that because although obviously Horde Prime takes over King Micah, he's still kind of still in there. And obviously when it comes to, like, the final battles and stuff, I think it's really nice that they all kind of get together as a family and everyone kind of ends up defeating Horde Prime at the end. And it's all about friendship and loyalty and trust and being there for people and love. Ultimately, love is what wins the day. And I think, I mean, we haven't even talked about the most important thing about this show. Would it be okay if I mention it now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I just wanted to quickly, because I know we're getting short on time, but I just wanted to quickly talk about, we talked about representation for body types and stuff. This is something the show does really well. But the other thing the show does really well is the LGBTQ representation.
Yes.
But it the thing that I really love about it is that it would be really easy for a show like this, for example, with Bo's dads, to really highlight the fact that Bo had two dads. And look, here's Bo with his two dads. Bo's got two dads, you know. But it doesn't make a big deal out of it. It's just Bo goes to his parents and Adora and Glimmer go to his parents and it just so happens that Bo has two dads. And the show never kind of pays attention to it. It's just that they are his parents. And I really love that because it really normalizes it. It's not a case of, you know, neon highlighting above Bo's dads like, oh, look, these are Bo's dads. You know, it's just this is the normal life. This is their life. It never kind of pays too much attention. Similarly with Double Trouble being non-binary, again, it's not something that anyone kind of points a finger to Double Trouble and goes, you're non-binary. It's just they are non-binary and they are referred to as they.
Yeah.
And I really love that about the show. Like, it doesn't need to massively advertise the fact that it's pro same-sex relationships. That's just these characters. That's who these characters are. That's who Bo's dads are. That's how Bo's grown up. It normalizes it to such a degree that it you can stick this on with a family viewing and children will watch this and it's just normal. Because it is normal, you know? It never has to kind of go to the point where it's, like I say, there's a big banner above this saying, oh, you know, we've got a show with same-sex relationships in. It's just there. It's just portrayed positively on screen. These are people who love each other, who show love and affection to each other, who support each other, who occasionally argue with each other, you know, in the case of, you know, Bo's dad and also with Spinnerella and Natossa as well.
Natossa.
Yeah. I keep getting her name wrong. I keep pronouncing it wrong. It's not, I think I emphasize the toss a bit too much. It's just Natossa. I often get that wrong. But yeah, it's just they are who they are. And I really appreciate that. And The other thing that I really like, sorry, I feel like I'm going off on one now, but the other thing that I really like about the show, and I have kind of touched on it, is characters are allowed to have flaws as well. Like, these are normal people. They're not overly stylized people. Like, they're not perfect looking. They're not always perfect, you know, with their personalities. People can have flaws. People can have negative traits. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to have flaws. And it's okay, like we've said before, it's okay to be forgiven and to forgive. I think this show is one of the most positive shows in terms of representation of all levels, as well as good character development and growth, and a show in a really positive way for people to behave. It's one of the most positively represented shows that I... And especially an animated show as well. I can't think of anything like it. This show feels so unique, really. I mean, it's bizarre that it's unique because more shows should be like this.
Exactly.
But it feels like, it feels unique. But I'm kind of sad that it's ended because I want to see more of this. I want to see more of these characters and their lives. But ultimately, I want to see more of what, of the groundwork that this show has put out there. That it's okay to look different. It's okay to act different. It's okay to be part of the LGBTQ community. This show is so positive in pretty much every regard. And it feels like so many people have slept on it. Maybe because it's animated, I don't know. But it's so worth your time.
It's definitely underrated. Yeah. I will say that. Because I didn't think about watching it until this year.
Yeah.
But it's been around for 2 years, right? So I think it's a gem that most people kind of ignore.
Yeah. And also just, and sorry, I feel like I'm going off on one again. I just want to quickly mention that you can definitely tell there's a lot of inspiration in the animation style from Studio Ghibli and Hayao Miyazaki, especially Princess Mononoke. Whenever I watch, especially in season 5, when they're being kind of taken over by the darkness, there's a lot of Princess Mononoke visuals in there, and I am all for the callbacks to Miyazaki, but I think they've acknowledged that he has been a big inspiration to them for the look of this show, and you can absolutely tell. I would highly recommend, if anyone likes any Miyazaki, especially Princess Mononoke, I think they would love the look of this. It's obviously, like we've said, a lot more brightly coloured, but there's a darkness in there, and it's something that it does bleed through. The darkness bleeds through, and it's done so beautifully visually as well. So yeah, I just wanted to mention, call back to Miyazaki, because he's a legend and I love him.
I love Miyazaki's films. Yeah. I will admit, Princess Mononoke is one that I still need to watch.
I think you'd really like it.
So I did not catch... Yeah, it's on my queue, I promise. Because I love the ones that I have watched. Because I grew up watching Kiki's Delivery Service and My Neighbor Totoro. And, yeah, of course, Spirited Away. I think I watched Howl's Moving Castle once. I watched one of his later films that were mostly aimed towards adults, called The Wind Rises.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that one, but I know Princess Mononoke, it's a classic. I gotta watch it. So I did not catch the callbacks that you mentioned, but I'm sure once I watch that movie, I'll understand. We are going to wrap up with our final section called What's Your Princess Power? And Em, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I didn't put much thought into this because I didn't really have to. My princess power would be, I would want to teleport like Glimmer, and I'd also love to be sparkly as well. So as long as I could teleport and be all sparkly, I think I'd be quite happy.
Well, teleportation is quite a convenient power. I've always been envious of Nightcrawler.
Oh, I love Nightcrawler. Maybe that's where that's come from. The ability to teleport into a room that I shouldn't be in. But Nightcrawler's not especially sparkly with his teleportation. So I would like the sparkles.
Yeah, yeah. And not like Twilight vampire sparkles.
Oh, no.
Much classier than that, guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Classy, yeah.
For me, I would like to have... This is not original, but I would like to have wind powers like Spinnerella does. This is going to sound kind of stupid, but so I don't believe in astrology, but it's kind of fun just to read about it sometimes. So my sign is Libra, and I remember reading in like some Yahoo article way back when Yahoo was super... when Yahoo was the search engine you would use. And like they had like a astrology section, and like I remember reading about how Libra is like the air sign, and like some of the other signs were considered earth signs or fire signs. So I like the fact that I'm Libra. I kind of agree with the traits. I think I have some of those Libra traits. And so because of that, I like the idea of having wind powers like Spinnerella, because wind is invisible but can be very powerful. Yeah. And very helpful in this situation.
Yeah, it's I think wind power would be really great, because you could like have a sort of light breeze maybe, or you could have like a tornado, so you could have different mm-hmm. powers for different situations. So if you wanted to, like, I don't know, you were thinking of having your own wind farm, for example, because you thought, well, I don't want to rely on gas or electricity or anything like that. So you wanted to make your own electricity instead of going on the grid. You could power your own wind farm and like have a light, gentle breeze. Or if someone attacked you, you could be all like tornado. So basically what we're saying is, if we were X-Men, I'd be Nightcrawler and you'd be Storm.
Yes. Oh, this is amazing. I can't believe we're ending this episode already. No, it's my fault. Oh, Em, thank you so much for your time here on the Bingeables podcast. Please feel free to share your social media handles again.
Well, thank you so much, Chinlin. I have had the best time talking with you. I'm sorry I've talked a lot about She-Ra, but I think it's such a great show. And I'm so happy that we've done this. And thank you again for letting me come on the Bingeables podcast. My podcast is called Verbal Diorama. I like to talk about the history and legacy of movies you know and movies you don't. And if you want to talk to me about, well, She-Ra or anything really, or X-Men for that matter, you can talk to me. I am on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Verbal Diorama, so it's all the same for all of them. And yeah, feel free to get in touch, and especially to talk about She-Ra, because I think this is a great show and I'm more than happy to talk to people about it if they would like to. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I am so happy to have you here finally, and hopefully maybe sometime in 2021. I know your schedule is super busy and you always plan ahead months in advance. Hopefully we can collaborate again.
Absolutely. I would be absolutely delighted to do anything with you, Chinlin. You know that.
Oh, thank you. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this wonderful discussion about She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. Thanks again for tuning in. So, until next time, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEBLESPOD. ABLESPOD.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving.